Hello, respective viewers. I'm George from Ireland. So this video is about how the Russo-Ukrainian war is going to pan out, because tomorrow it'll be 13 months since the Russian Federation's illegal war of unprovoked aggression was launched against Ukraine, a war that was judged illegal by the International Court of Justice. Anyway, so the war is nowhere near its conclusion. It may not be halfway through. I think it's going to rumble on till mid-2024, at least. Somewhat depends what you mean by end. There might be a ceasefire, there might even be a formal peace treaty, but it might sputter on. Look at the Korean War, and supposedly there's only a truce. Technically, they're still at war against each other, the two South Koreas. But it's a sort of a frozen conflict, which is what we may end up happening with happening in here. So the Russia's spring offensive 2023 is certainly underway, but it's rather a whimper. And they've thrown tens of thousands of men at Bakhmut, which is the vortex of the war, that city in Donetsk. They say not very strategically important. Yes, a number of roads converge there, but roads can be mined, bridges can be blown up. Most military vehicles can go off-road anyway. So yeah, Bakhmut was the center of salt mining and white wine production. But these industries stopped functioning a year ago, and they can't be run without people. So almost all the civilians have fled the city anyway. So people are their most precious economic resource, and they're gone. So the head of the Wagner private military company, Yevgeny Prigozhin, he had his men fighting there. And he said in February this year that the city would be taken by the end of April 2023. Even now, that doesn't seem like a foregone conclusion. And everybody's been surprised just how long Ukraine has held out in Bakhmut, and they might even end up winning. Makes me think of Mariupol a year ago. And again, Mariupol held out much longer than anybody forecast. I don't know of a single pundit who thought that over a year this war would still be going on, and Russia would be nowhere near Kyiv and wouldn't have taken Kharkiv, the second biggest city. Anyway, so the Russian military's performance has been deeply unimpressive. But don't forget that Wagner is not formally part of the Russian military. That's a separate formation. So there was supposedly plausible deniability when Wagner Group was fighting in Mali, the Central African Republic, Syria, Libya, Mozambique, and so on. So in March this year, a NATO memo said that Ukraine had lost five times more troops than Bakhmut. Now, it's dubious whether NATO really believes that. Do they leak it to friendly media outlets because their target is Western readerships and viewerships to sustain morale, which otherwise might be flagging, and to convince Western governments to maintain shipments of weapons to Ukraine? They've got to furnish Ukraine with munitions or the war's over. So William Howard Russell, and I'm tired of quoting him, he famously said that the first casualty of war is truth. And of course, the Ukraine war is no exception. But anyway, notwithstanding that desire to give a fillip to Ukrainian morale, there's no doubt the Russians have sustained significantly more casualties than Ukraine in war, and particularly in Bakhmut. Bear in mind that Russia outnumbers Ukraine 3.5 to 1. So it's been turned into an attritional war. President Putin believes he can wear Ukraine down, and perhaps more importantly, wear down Western resolve. So Russia often wins through numbers, the sheer weight of metal, and just sheer numbers of troops. So it appears that Russia is unperturbed by morbidity in Bakhmut. Wagner recruits have been thrown into battle, in some cases untrained. They're regarded as being very low-grade troops, often prison recruits, and often they're guest workers from former Soviet republics like Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan. Some of whom were free men, but they volunteered. Some of whom were in prison, might have been innocent, might have been guilty, might have been for trifling offences. But the Russian public doesn't care about them over much. So Prigozhin, notably, he's blamed the underperformance of Wagner Group on the army supposedly starving Wagner of ammunition and weapons. That's probably at least true. Now, there's an unhealthy rivalry between the army and Prigozhin, and Prigozhin was crowing about supposed his victories. So some army officers openly loathe him, see him as a prima donna, say he never actually served in the army, and they despise him for posing as a military man, saying he only fights for profit. And many of these criticisms are valid, but a lot of pro-Kremlin bloggers who are vociferously pro-war have excoriated the army's top brass, and they've also slammed Wagner for its inefficacy. But anyway, those in the know of Russia are really aghast and underwhelmed by the performance of the Russian military. There's no blitzkrieg like it was supposed to be. You know, February 2022 was meant to be coup de main, take Kyiv in 48 hours. Anyway, the army's clearly got little maneuverability. So it was meant to bypass cities to help them speed on, but even that strategy didn't work. But other than that, they surround cities with infantry, and then they just did let the artillery do the rest. Blow to the city to bits over weeks is a tried and tested tactic. It's slow but effective. But I remember, I think it was Thomas McSweeney said, or Terence McSweeney, those is not those who inflict the most, but those who can suffer the most who can conquer. So Ukraine has proved its willingness to endure most horrendous suffering. So anyway, I think Russia will take Bakhmut in the end, but it'll be a heap of rubble. So that will be all useless and won't really, you know, reverse Russia's demographic decline. It was kidnapping children to help with that. So he's lost tens of thousands of soldiers in the conflagration, like 200,000 casualties, perhaps only a quarter of those killed. They say the Wagner ones, the wounded ones, are just not even treated. So a lot of them die avoidably. But they've been fighting in Bakhmut since August 2022. So Ukrainians might be a bit dislodged, but the Ukrainians might decide that discretion is the better part of valor. They've held the Russians at bay for several months, inflicted tens of thousands of casualties, and they'll do the cost-benefit analysis. And they say there's no advantage in remaining here any longer. They could withdraw in good order. So Russia cannot afford to rebuild all the cities that it's razed. It's already put a lot of money into trying to rebuild Mariupol. So its economy has been dented by sanctions. Anyway, there's an upcoming Russian victory in Bakhmut, but it'll be a Pyrrhic one. So this much-vaunted spring offensive is supposedly running out of steam. Russia's looking rather exhausted, and there's going to be a spring draft of soldiers this year. They've raised the draft age. So easily 500,000 young men have emigrated to avoid conscription, and most of those are highly educated, the people that Russia can least afford to lose. So Russia's going to have to fend off the Ukrainian offensive launched in summer 2023. Now, Ukraine requested 300 modern tanks. Only 82 have been pledged. Only a few of those have been received, and some of them won't be received till autumn 2023. So Russian countries are Western countries are rather ungenerous. And if Ukraine were amply armed, they would have won by now. And it was scandalous to see in a Belgian warehouse over 100 German Leopard 3 tanks sitting there unused. And they could have been compulsory purchased by the Belgian government. Anyway, the two sides may well be exhausted by the summer of 2024. So Russia's money will have run out. They're burning through their reserves. $350 million of theirs is frozen in assets abroad. But the question is, will Russia's will to fight last longer than Western political will to sustain Ukraine? So far, Western political will is bearing up, and it surprises me how much it is. There might be a ceasefire. We know Putin will break every deal he ever signs. He always reneges in it. He's never a man of his word. He's utterly dishonorable. He's totally untrustworthy. He is just the lowest of the low and completely treacherous and shameless. So I can 100% guarantee you he will break any deal he signs. It's a question of how gross the breach is. He might accept liminality for the illegally occupied territories as the best he can get, and have a situation a bit like in Transnistria, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, so on. But the incendiary and insane rhetoric about a thermonuclear war is actually reassuring, because it underscores yet again how poorly the conventional fight is going for Russia. And Russia's never been obliged to resort to such talk before. And notably, this year, it's been Medvedev who says this, his sidekick, not Putin himself. So the fact is, we've got to consider really armaments as well as the battlefield and the economy to work out how long this conflict is going to go on for. So Russia's low running low on ammunition. Last year, had to repurpose anti-ship missiles to use them to strike land-based targets, often wildly inaccurate. So Russia boasted 8,000 tanks before the war. Now, this datum is probably a lie, like everything the Kremlin ever says. But open source analysis says Russia's lost almost 2,000 tanks. There might be other tanks they've lost, we don't know. So it's taken some tanks out of storage. They often appear to be very badly maintained. There was a much vaunted Armata tank, the Terminator, as it was known, and it was far less impressive than we led to believe. It was invented to cope with urban fighting, can fire almost directly upwards for people at buildings, because they found that they couldn't do that when they needed to, fighting in Chechnya. And they don't have good all-arm cooperation, don't have a sufficient infantry screen around tanks. So the Russian defense minister said his country stepping up armaments production. Say, in late 2022, Russia began firing these large salvos at Ukrainian civilian infrastructure, electricity infrastructure. So the dozens of missiles and rockets were fired at power stations every day, such like. And that took down up to 40% of the Ukrainian grid at a time. So people were left without heating for days, and it's minus 10. That was a death sentence for babies and for elderly people. But this attempt to break Ukrainian morale failed. Some civilians died, but Ukrainian engineers became sufficiently adept at reconnecting the grid, and they're through it now. You know, they've got other things like sleeping bags and tents even to use inside, whatever generators, batteries to power up to save electricity when the electricity is running, to use when it's not generators. And that's why it didn't break them. And they're going to be connected to the European Union electric grid. So anyway, that was General Sergei Sorovikin who counseled this, these attacks on the electric grid. And this did not subdue the Ukrainians. It was also a waste of munitions. If all those munitions had been used solely to hit Ukrainian military formations, Russia might have won. Anyway, but Ukrainian air defense is getting better. It's shooting down more Russian rockets and missiles and drones, and the Russians have got fewer of those things to throw at Russia. So in March this year, Russia used its Kinjal, or Dagger missiles, for the very first time. They're nuclear-capable missiles, and they fly over 6,000 kilometers per hour. They're supposed to be impossible to shoot down. So Russia's proved that they work, doesn't quite prove they're unstoppable, but they are ruinously expensive. They're used to blow up electricity substations, which could be done with far cheaper munitions. But I suppose if you paid for them and you it comes to war, you should actually use them. But anyway, the daily occurrence of attacks on the electric grid from November 2022 to March 2023, but you know, they were very frequent late last year, but now they're once a fortnight. So it clearly hasn't worked to show how their strategy was ill-conceived. And the lack of ammunition for Wagner, that might not be sheer malice and rivalry. It might be because Russia's got so little left. So now Ukraine is also suffering from a paucity of munitions, and Western countries have been rather behindhand and stingy about doling out munitions. They just not ramped up their production and realized that their own military stocks are actually very low. But, you know, Russia is the main potential enemy. So if Ukraine's going to defeat Russia for NATO countries, well, then NATO countries should say thanks. So Russia's tactics are very munition intensive. Munitions are very inaccurate. So they have to fire several shells to do the same damage that one NATO manufactured shell can do. The wars are often won by things as simple as factory output and as logistics. And the USSR won the Second World War often through sheer numbers of men and munitions rather than tactical genius. Anyway, Bakhmut is really where it's happening, not anywhere else. But Biden sent a message to Putin in autumn 2022. We don't know what he said, but obviously worked, right? So because, you know, Russia was saying if Ukraine keeps trying to liberate the illegally occupied territories, then Russia shall respond with weapons of mass destruction. But whatever Biden said, it worked. Okay, Putin had said this is no bluff, talk of weapons of mass destruction. But 6 months on, it patently is a bluff because he hasn't used it. So coming to armaments again, you know, Russia's losing tanks at a rate of 150 a month. Now, that rate could go up or down. But it can only produce about 80 a month. And the T-62s they got out of storage often are not really working, are scarcely usable. They're called T-62 because they were designed in 1962. There's one big Russian tank factory, Ural Vagon Zavod, in the Urals. And if that was taken out, that'd be it. It'd be game over for Russia. So this army's got army at the core of its doctrine. And it's disastrous that they're going to run out of tanks at this rate within 2 years. But anyway, it looks like the West is not going to supply Ukraine with long-range missiles to annihilate the tank factories. The United States and NATO countries consider this to be too provocative. We know that the People's Republic of China sold assault rifles to Russia. The PRC and Russia try to keep the secret. But assault rifles account for a very small percentage of the casualties inflicted in modern warfare. If China were to choose to sell heavy equipment to Russia, now that would be a game changer, like tanks, artillery shells, missiles, armored personnel carriers. That would mean that Russia would have enough equipment to achieve a decisive battlefield advantage. But at the moment, it's not like that. It's a slogging match in the mud. It's almost a stalemate. So like North Korea sold shells to Russia, that's how desperate they are. But as I say, Ukraine's also got a severe problem. So the equipment they're given by NATO countries and other friendly countries is seldom the latest equipment. Western countries or places like Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, they supply it grudgingly, they supply it too late. So Ukraine's also in danger of running out of ammunition. They even had to get a machine gun out of a museum, but it works. There is a Ukrainian defense industry, but it can't keep pace with its losses. Nevertheless, Ukraine is obtaining more and more sophisticated armaments, but its foes' armaments are being degraded. I'll come on to the economics of for war. So for 30 years, the world has appeased the hyper-aggressive Russia with the illegal occupation of areas of Moldova and Georgia, many huge-scale chemical weapons attacks on civilians in Syria, the assassination of foreign citizens in foreign countries, you know, numerous atrocities against Russia's own citizens in Chechnya, Voronezh, Moscow, you know, the apartment block bombings in 1999. And these were just shrugged off because people wanted money. It was easy to make money trading with Russia. And Russia was slapped on the wrist with the mildest sanctions and just scarcely tutted at. Sanctions are beginning to bite, but sanctions on the road are never enough. I mean, even Russia admitted a 2% gross domestic product shrinkage in 2022. And the IMF said it'll shrink 4% in 2023. So some sectors damaged more than others. The oil price cap introduced in late 2022 has begun to take its toll. So profits are down 50% so far in 2023, year on year. But admittedly, 2022 was a bumper year. So Western nations own most of the world's insurance, and they will not insure seaborne cargoes of oil above a certain price. I think it's the $60 price cap. So Russia's selling a lot of it below market price, but there's still a profit in it. Otherwise, they'd reduce production too much, the world price would rise. And Russia's selling at a huge discount to India and China, and Turkey, indeed. So Western countries have been able to pivot away from Russian hydrocarbons, not been as damaging to Western economies as Russia was hoping. Western countries are becoming more energy efficient, you know, with insulation and so on, transitioning to renewable energy. Like Norway, for example, is already 99% renewable. So that's bad news for the Russian economy. Look at arms exports, which is also a significant part of the Russian economy. So armament production is the only large-scale manufacturing industry in Russia. Automobile production is minor, has been really crushed by this war. Still going, though. Anyway, arms sales have been falling for 7 years in a row, and it's a trend that appears to be accelerating. Of course, Russian military manufacturing has to prioritize supplying the Russian armed forces, and its military hardware has always been rated second best, but it was the cheapest stuff on the market. And now it's been proven to be at least a generation behind its Western analogs. This war is the worst possible advertisement for the Russian armaments industry. Russia's only ever won through numbers, not technology. Look at the Gulf War in 1991, when Iraq was armed almost exclusively with Soviet-manufactured military technology. Anyway, arms sales are falling for various reasons, and Russia just can't produce enough for export. It's often not giving things on the bill of sale, things that are unusable, very shoddy goods. So it's such poor quality. Anyway, the United States has often twisted the arms of various countries like Indonesia and Egypt into not purchasing Russian armaments. So with hydrocarbon profits down, arms sales profits down, Russia is facing an economic crisis within a couple of years. It's going to have trouble exporting its metals. You know, another country was in Canada banned buying aluminium from them. It's food, like they sell quite a lot of fish to the European Union. It's chemicals and so on. But Russia is becoming cunning at circumventing sanctions. So they've been doing this since 2014. They tried to sanction-proof the economy in the last few years, and they've got increasingly amicable relations with Iran, and Tehran has briefed them on how to get around these sanctions. So these poverty-stricken quantum Soviet states in Central Asia are vital for the stratagem. The Putin epigons, they allow Russian companies to purchase Western goods via them. For instance, you know, Kazakhstan allowing a Russian company to order a component from them. The Tajiks will buy it from whatever, the Kazakhs will buy it from the USA, sell it on to Russia, and so on. And there'll be a small handling fee. Even when the contract to buy the item from the USA says there's a not-for-resale clause, they'll just break that. But there could be secondary sanctions. Now, they're worried about doing that. Western countries are worried about secondary sanctions on former Soviet states because it might push them closer to Russia. And then Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan might allow more open Russian military recruitment because they're desperate. They just need the money. So Russia's already got assault rifles from China, and China's selling dual-use items. We know a lot of sanctions bustings via the UAE, or maybe more shockingly, via Turkey, which is a NATO country, but not sanctioning. Anyway, the ruble is buoyant, but that's partly because they can hardly import anything. The government's also tried to support it, but that might be too expensive to do. But, you know, Ukraine's economy suffered very badly. They shrunk at least 30% in 2022. 8 million people have moved west. That's 20% of the population. Some of those will never move back. Ukraine needs 6 billion euros a month from the European Union just to sustain the government, pay salaries and so on, the central maintenance, and they're getting that. I remember, of course, some Ukrainian people have gone to Russia, a few voluntarily, many kidnapped. Well, let's look at the diplomatic side of the war. So few will end an outright victory, and it's probable this one will end a negotiation too. And on St. Patrick's Day this year, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for President Putin. So the Russian media brag that Russia took thousands of children from Ukraine to Russia and had them adopted or put them in orphanages. And this was almost always without parental permission. The children often had two living parents who were perfectly good parents and capable of raising their children. So what Russia has done is to commit massive scale international child abduction. So the ICC began with this charge because it's got proof positive. Now, there are even more serious crimes that are committed by the Putin regime, such as obviously the mass murder of civilians, large-scale rape, and so on. But there is not the proof positive in that Moscow has nobody say, yeah, sure, we did it. And here are the photos, and here are the video footage, and here are the names of the victims. But Moscow has been the proclamator of its own guilt in these child kidnappings. It claims, oh, it's keeping them safe from the war that Russia itself started. They would be safe if it weren't for Russia. So the ICC has issued arrest warrants so Putin can't travel to 123 out of 193 sovereign states who are signed up to the Rome Statute. That complicates the diplomatic situation. He's due to go to South Africa for a BRICS summit, but South Africa probably won't arrest him, even though they are signed up to the ICC. It would be a shocking display of hypocrisy. Now, Beijing could play the peacemaker. Beijing's watchword is stability. Energy price rises, food price rises have hurt the global economy, including China. Despite the low oil and gas prices for China, and China's customers are paying more for oil and gas, they can buy a few of China's manufacturers. But there are some upsides to this war from China because it deepens Russian dependency on China. Moreover, China can expand its influence in other former Soviet spheres, like in Central Asia, and so on. And you could just buy up assets very cheaply in Russia. So Putin faces a re-election in March 2023. Obviously, flagrant cheating and total control of the media make his election a foregone conclusion. We know the result of elections in Russia decades in advance. And it's not hard to be popular when there's 360-degree propaganda in your favor. Just, you know, a full-spectrum cult of the personality. But what Moscow is banking on is Biden losing the November 2024 election. I mean, his approval rating is still negative, not that badly negative, at about -5 now. Trump may yet get the Republican nomination, even if he's arrested, even if he's indicted. But there could be a Trump second term. But if there is no Trump second term, then Ron DeSantis would be a Republican president. Republican president, whether it's DeSantis or Trump, would almost certainly cut aid to Ukraine. And Trump even said he would have ended this war by allowing Putin to occupy some of the illegally seized land. So that was obviously very perturbing for the Ukrainians. He said, we need to gain a big advantage now, just in case Trump comes back and throws under the bus. But that's why Russia realized they can't win quickly, desperately want to stretch it out to November 2024, or maybe really January 2025, when maybe a cowardly and treacherous US president is elected. Remember, Ukraine has fought alongside the United States. Ukraine sent troops to Iraq, Ukraine sent troops to Afghanistan to help the Americans. Moreover, the United States signed the Budapest Memorandum along with Russia, the United Kingdom and Ukraine, recognizing Ukraine's independence, territorial integrity and so forth. So the United States has vowed to be a guarantor of Ukrainian freedom. But there's a 75% chance that Biden will be re-elected. Even if it is not, you know, DeSantis at least has already backtracked on some of his comments about wishing to betray Ukraine. So what is a prediction, taking into account what the battlefield situation and almost all the fighting is around Bakhmut right now, armaments and the economy, the diplomatic side? So the war is going to last until the summer of 2024 at least. There'll then be a United Nations negotiated ceasefire. There'll be some sort of ambiguous status for some of East Ukraine and indeed Crimea. I just don't see how Ukraine can retake Crimea. There'll be a compromise. Ukraine will be allowed to join the European Union. Russia won't object, but not to join NATO. Putin's already said, oh, Ukraine's an independent country. They can join the EU when they got candidate status. So unfortunately, Putin and his cronies will not face justice in front of the International Criminal Court. Russia will not allow United Nations peacekeepers in. It's illegal occupiers. So they'll probably call those peacekeepers, just like they do in Georgia and Moldova. President Putin will win another term. He will retire in 2030. The next generation of Russian leaders will probably gradually achieve a rapprochement with Ukraine. This has happened in Kosovo and Serbia. He's not necessarily going to go to like Nikolai Patrushev or, Sergei Shoigu or someone like that. Yeah, or even Medvedev or Vladimir Borodkin. Putin's even talked about a man in his 30s in the presidential administration, handing on the baton to him. Okay, thank you for watching my channel. Please donate on PayPal. I really need donations to keep this going. George Callahan 79 at gmail.com. Goodbye.